come from Feines Bewusstsein, Fine Consciousness, the podcast for meditation. This is episode number 5. I am Anne Siegel and I'm a writer and may wouldn't be one without my meditation practice because it helps me to focus and gives me strength and the intuition to find the right stories. Swami Shailendra Sarasvati war in der letzten Folge dieses Podcasts schon mein Gesprächspartner über vedische Meditation, das Dharma, Diversity und Peace und was das mit einem durchgeknallten Politiker im Weißen Haus zu tun hat. This is the second episode in English and number 2 of my 3 Swami Shailendra talks. I met my Indian teacher, who's a master in Vedic meditation and yoga and teaches all over the world, at Ilse Eickhoff Academy, a retreat in northern Germany, Bremen. Swami Shailendra has been a quantum physicist and economist before he met Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who, as far as I am informed, asked the then quantum physicist if he wouldn't like to become his student when he'd started his practice of transcendental meditation. Shailendra said, "I don't think I have to know Newton in person to practice his laws." He came back to Maharshi later and started his life as a meditation teacher himself in the cold, dark winter of Finland. Apropos winter, we are sitting here in a meditation retreat and the Swami became my teacher for advanced techniques in Vedic meditation years ago. Vedic meditation is a 4,000-year-old technique from India and was formerly known also as transcendental meditation or deep meditation before Guru Dev brought this knowledge down from the Himalayas and later to a public. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, also known as Maharshi then, was the one who translated this old technique for a brighter Western audience. And here's a little gift to all my writer's friends. Hermann Hesse is said to have practiced the same meditation already 100 years ago, like we do it today. 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening to lower your stress level, calm your nerve system, or to improve your immune functions. Not too bad in a time of a virus that also produces stress and anxiety, right? So let's jump back to my second part with Swami Shailendra. We are sitting in a meditation room, face to face on a big mat, my teacher in his colorful orange robe and me facing a wonderful wintry forest glade behind the window with a glimpse of snow on the pine trees. Also, viel Spaß mit Folge 5 von Feines Bewusstsein. We are talking about Akshi, traction and distraction, fully blinded people, collective consciousness and the levels of God, integration, family, and what it means to meditate in a society that faces a shift of paradigm. Enjoy, or as we say in German, gute Unterhaltung. So let's talk about communication. Sometimes I think we live in a world of distraction. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Well, traction. No, it could be this, it could be you.
Okay. Yeah.
We are carried away. Traction is to carry, you know, tractor carries things. So, we have both tendencies to move out and to move in. Yeah. And both are important because consciousness as such wants to be conscious, okay? And it wants to be conscious in all possible ways, and it wants to be conscious extensively and intensively.
No. So into two different directions.
It, normally we think that these two are opposite to each other. Like. Okay. Like when I'm just sitting in the room, I'm aware of almost everything that's happening. And when I'm reading some fine print, then I'm intensely aware of that fine print, but at that time I'm not aware of what is happening around me.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So when I'm intensely focused, then extensivity is lost, and when I'm extended, then one is lost, the other is gained. Yeah. But this is a limitation of the physical body. Consciousness doesn't have that limitation.
Oh, that's interesting. Yes, you're right. Yeah.
So consciousness can afford to be extensive as well as intensive. But for that, it uses different instruments.
Okay.
For intensive experiences, it has created this body.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And because it has created an eye, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The eye can see very clearly, very precise boundaries and everything, focused. But it has to sacrifice extensivity because it cannot see beyond a particular distance. But with the mind's eye, when we see a dream, let's say,
mm-hmm.
or if I close my eyes and imagine something, then I'm not using this physical eye. In fact, to bring this contrast clearly, in Sanskrit, each of these senses has two different names.
Ah.
One is the external sense and one is the internal sense.
Wow. That makes so much sense.
Yeah. Okay. It's become so clear. Like this is called Akshi.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to see is called Chakshu.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Like when I see a dream, I don't see with the Akshi, but I see with the Chakshu. Even a blind person is euphemistically called a Gyan Chakshu. That means he is seeing with the Chakshu, not with the Akshi.
Oh, wow.
He has not lost his Chakshu, he has only lost his Akshi.
I have some blind friends and they definitely have this.
I also had very good blind friend. In fact, I was once the vice president of the Blind Students Association of India.
Really? You wear glasses? No.
Because there was, I had lots of blind friends in the hostel we were living together, and they wanted one eyed person also to help them. So that's another.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Oh, well, this brings me to a thought I had earlier, because your explanation is wonderful. But what my impression when I walk through a city is, so many people, they don't see what's surrounding them.
Hmm.
They just are, I don't know, fully blinded by their smartphones.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, hello? I mean, sometimes it's like, I'm like, okay, love on first sight doesn't happen anymore. Because you don't see who's around.
It's like
you walk and have Tinder, for example, on the mobile phone, but maybe the most beautiful person next to you, you don't realize it's next to you. So how is this, from your perspective, what would you say about this? I mean, isn't that a crazy way how our society changes right now?
Well,
in contact with,
I don't see it that negatively as most people see. It's not that we are losing contact. It's just that we are having contact in a different way. Maybe I'm talking to 10 different people with my smartphone.
Yes.
So my body is not in touch with the next body in space
mm-hmm.
and time.
Mm-hmm.
But like suppose when I'm reading a book, I read Plato's book, for example. I am in contact with him.
Yeah.
Not just smartphones, even books have been doing that. When I'm absorbed in a book, I'm not aware about who is going around me. But that was considered good because we have got used to that.
This is so interesting. Yes.
Smartphones is something new. So we have not got used to it. So we always think, the old ways were good and the new. Somebody being absorbed in a book is considered okay, fine.
Yes.
Sitting in a library or sitting alone in some place. But smartphone we look down upon.
Yeah, maybe that's the same thing in India. I don't know. I'm very often in Panama and we were talking about it, like, because so many people are just, staring on their smartphones. But Panama has not a really culture of newspapers or books.
Uh-huh.
So this is the way people get information, So I wouldn't see it as negative as I see it here.
Yeah.
I mean, this is crazy. But you remind me of that it's maybe not the right thought,
Interesting. And in fact, you have better choice that way.
Mm-hmm.
when you physically, if you get in touch with people, then you don't have that much choice. Like doctors, all doctors have their WhatsApp group, let's say.
Yes.
No. And they'll be talking about, so they could choose a particular type of people, and the same person can have a different group with a different kind of interest. Yeah. So, but when we are sitting together in a room, then it's not necessary that everybody has the same interest. No. And even if, moreover, we don't even want to have the same interest all the time. Like sometimes I want to be with all the doctors and sometimes I want to be with all the cricket players because I am, you know, interested in cricket also or in something else, you know. But if we have a mixture, someone is a doctor, another is a cricket player, another is a musician, that won't be a very meaningful conversation there.
Would you say it destroys social classes in a way? Because you have so much easier access to people, I would say, from a different class. I know
it creates different kinds of classes.
Okay.
In fact, as we were saying, differentiation and integration both are needed. It creates more differentiation. And generally we think differentiation is anti-harmony. No.
Yeah.
But as we just discussed, differentiation is very necessary. Harmony is not created by everybody doing the same thing. Harmony is at a different level.
Maybe you just saw this big smile I had when you mentioned WhatsApp because it reminded me of something crazy I recently read. It was an interview of a divorce lawyer and she was a specialist and she knew so much about it and she had advices for all people who want to get divorced. And then she said, well, there's one thing I completely forbid if a former couple is in the process. When it's about the kids, so they WhatsApp all the time, so they are not allowed to block each other on WhatsApp because it triggers old emotions.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's such an emotional thing, virtual communication.
People are like on Facebook, if they don't get likes and things like that, they get depressed. So that is a negative part of it, yeah.
Yes.
But that is because every new technology has good sides and bad sides.
What would be the good side of Facebook for you?
Good side of Facebook, the way I use Facebook, I never see anybody's posts. You know, and whatever I find really interesting, I post it.
Very good. This is selfish in a way, but fantastic.
Yeah, because...
And it's, on the other side, it's so not
because,
selfish, you know?
Because what I think is important, if I post it, people who are likely to act upon it or who also think the same thing is important will read it, others will ignore it.
That's very good. Like that. Yeah.
So... A community of like-minded people, like say I post about meditation. No, those friends on Facebook who are not meditators will probably ignore that.
Yes, yes.
But that doesn't, you know, stop us from creating a common society of meditators at various places, at different times.
Yeah. No? Yeah.
Like I find time at night, let's say, no? And I post something, and somebody else finds time at noon, so he can read that post and respond.
Yes.
So that makes it more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And if you depend on face-to-face contact, then both people have to be free at the same time. Yeah. And both people have to be in the same mood to talk about the same thing. Mm-hmm. Moods also keep changing.
Absolutely, yeah? Yes. Yeah.
So this has improved communication. And it's a very good thing. Only thing is that this is new. We are not used to it. So anything new, people fear first.
Yeah. It's interesting because there's this new analysis on migration from Africa. And this was very interesting to read. It's, you see, I read a lot. So it said like a lot of migrants who come to Europe, it's a big topic here, you know, migration, and we don't know what's coming out of it. But they get the wrong images because they all use cell phones now. And there are these crazy images like, oh, in Europe, everyone has a big ass car, you know, and I don't know, lives in a castle, drinks champagne, blah, blah, blah. All this, like, I would say maybe a very capitalistic way of, you know, yeah. So this is where you get the wrong image out of maybe a good tool.
Because they were able to see.
Yes, and they wanted to go there, not knowing that it's not the reality, you know, because this was their image. They got like mini series or pictures, like someone who's living, let's say, in Senegal or so, and he's like, "Oh, I want to go there," you know. This is the impulse coming out of a wrong image.
It may be exaggerated to some extent, because in the movies, etc., they see it maybe exaggerated. But the difference is still there, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah.
So it may not be that much of a difference. The solution to that is not, again, like some people in Germany are thinking in right terms, is to create situations there so that they don't have to move.
I completely agree, and migration is such a big topic in our times, but it was always a big topic. I wouldn't be there if there's not migration, because my father migrated, you know.
It's very natural for a person to move from an uncomfortable place to a more comfortable place.
Yes,
So the solution is neither to stop him or nor to take him or whatever. The solution is to create comfort there. And for that, whether we are, see, another thing is, people think altruism and selfishness are two opposite things.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. But here again, there's a big misunderstanding. The most selfish thing that you can do is also the most altruistic thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Like this example of cells.
Yes.
Every cell is completely selfish because it doesn't bother about anybody else. It just bothers about what its own inner self says and works accordingly. But that deepest self is the same. Mm-hmm. Like if I become totally selfish, I don't bother about anybody, but I just go deep inside. To be really selfish, I have to go deep inside to know what I really want, not what has been taught by the society for me to want. Because that is also the problem, because society has told me you should want to this.
Yes, exactly.
So if we remove all those layers, and if I go really deep inside, I will get some answer that I want to do this. Somebody else also goes deep within himself, will get an answer he should do with this. And these two things will be different. They have to be different. If I go deep inside and I find that I should become a doctor, and another person goes deep inside himself and finds he should become an engineer, that's good for the society. If everybody starts thinking he should be a doctor, they're all doctors and no engineers, there'll be a problem. But what is happening is, if you say, oh, he is a doctor, so let me also become a doctor, then the problems come, because we are taking the dharma of someone else. In Bhagavad Gita, it very clearly says someone else's dharma is very bad. Like one should not, even if it looks to be fantastic, but one should follow one's own dharma and not someone else's dharma.
That would be the same as to say the other one is always God.
Yeah. In fact, everyone is God. I am also God, and other one is, you are also God. And it's good that the God has expressed himself in two different ways. Because of this difference, something could be created. Otherwise, if everything is the same, then there's nothing happening. It's a boring thing.
And it even works when you have conflicts with other people, that you can be thankful because you had to learn something.
Yes, absolutely.
I have to admit that I once did some Luojong exercises, and I had a really, really bad lawsuit going on. Some they said they would be a publishing house, but they weren't, so they stole my copyrights.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to sit in front of this person, and I just had done this Lojong exercises, and my lawyer was sitting next to me, and he said, you don't have to say anything at all. And I was like, oh, that's cool, in stillness. So I had this Lojong exercise, like, be thankful for that this person is not your mother in this life. And at the moment I had this thought, this guy, he was completely losing his point, and the judge said, like, oh, you stop it here, you take it back. And I was like, oh wow, this works so well. And so, like, double happiness came out of this, you know. The other one is God.
Everybody is God.
Yes.
You know, like, again, God is collective consciousness.
Yes.
And in Vedic literature, it's very clear there are levels of gods.
Oh, good.
You know?
Okay.
Like, levels of organization are there.
How many levels are this?
Infinite.
Oh, wow.
Infinite levels of organizations. You know? Like, all these cells coming together has created one wholeness, mm-hmm. one set, which is different from each of these elements, and this is the real me. So I am the God for all my cells. And all my cells are living in heaven. Why? Because each cell has different requirements. Some cell requires calcium, some cells require that. And the same cell's requirement keeps changing from instant to instant. And still everybody's requirement is being fulfilled. No? So all my cells are living in heaven. Yeah. Because God is there. I am the God for all my cells. That means the wholeness is the God for its parts.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is a very concrete experience for me, a very clear experience for me that I exist. Yeah. Because of this very nice integration. Similarly, many people in a family, they are like the cells of another person which is the family.
Yeah, I was thinking of it earlier.
And this is called, in Vedic literature, this is called Kul Devata. Kul means a family,
mm-hmm.
and Devata means a level of God. And just like sometimes I want to express myself, I do it through the tongue. Sometimes I do it through my hand by writing.
Mm-hmm.
So the Kul Devata, the family God, can sometimes express from one, from the father or mother or the son or the daughter or like that.
Because we're different parts of the same body.
We are different parts of the same body.
Okay.
And normally, nowadays, the family is not so well integrated.
Yes.
So the family as a person is not experientially clear.
Yeah.
No. But in a vague sense, we can know that if one person in a family is sick, everybody is down to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Like, yeah, and in the positive, from a positive perspective, it would say everyone empowers every part.
Empowers everybody else.
Yes.
No?
Yeah.
You know, the son gets a prize in the school and everybody in the family is happy. No? Like if I eat something tasty, my tongue tastes it, but my eyes start glowing, all parts of my body are happy because one part is getting some good experience. So family is, just a digression, I've seen this family person actually in action. You know, there's a friend of mine who was here a few days back.
Okay.
You know, I know him from a long time, but his family, he has a younger brother and is a normal, you know, not very spiritual or, you know, rowdy kind of person.
Okay.
But their Kul Devi,
mm-hmm.
you know, the family, she would use that boy sometimes as the means of expression. And his express, like you know, channeling. You heard of channeling?
Yes.
Yeah? A person can channel some consciousness.
Yes.
So that Kuldevi used to channel through that boy. And not a very like spiritual or meditator or, okay. you know, you would consider them to be, you know, a nice receptacle for channeling or something, you know.
Okay.
Just an ordinary person.
Okay, good.
You know, but suddenly his character would change.
Ah, okay.
You know?
Yeah, which means the influence is so big because you become part of a bigger, higher thing.
She will talk like a lady, you know, because it was a Kuldevi.
Okay.
You know, and she would sort out all problems of the family, and immediately everybody would realize that Kuldevi has come, and the atmosphere would change. And like physically present, some great, great, great grandmother of the family has actually come and is talking to you.
Okay. So this is complete empowerment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So so that family consciousness can also be very clearly experienced, like as a person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it can use this person, sometimes it can use this person as a channel. Just like I use my hand as a channel, I use my tongue as a channel. So like that. So if the family is integrated enough, this collective personality of the family can be as clearly experienced as I experience myself as an individual. Similarly, at all levels.
Okay.
You know, Gaia is a person. You know, only thing is that Gaia is almost asleep right now or in coma, because suppose my cells were taken apart or the connection between them is lost, then I will lose consciousness. You know, so you will not be able to talk to me, because so like that, because the individuals in the world are not so well connected with each other. Because they are not connected with their own deepest self.
Yeah.
You know? Therefore, Gaia as a person you cannot talk to. You don't see her or you don't feel her.
Mm-hmm.
No. But you can say that she's there, but she's in coma. And as soon as more and more meditators start going deep within themselves and getting connected through that common consciousness, then the Gaia can wake up.
It's interesting. That leads me to a question I didn't have originally. So sometimes there are times like you can feel when we do meditation, it's like you feel there's like, this is hard. There's like, you have the feeling like there are all stones around you and you are one of a lot of people who meditate and have to lift it up. But I think we can always feel a little bit when there's a different consciousness in the world. Is this right, or is it just my imagination?
Right now you think that other people, non-meditators, are like rocks which we have to move.
Yes, yes, no? Yes.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, okay.
That, absolutely, you can feel that difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, how does laughter get transferred from one person to another person? She didn't tell a joke that I heard and then laughed it. There was something happening deep inside her, and something you just couldn't help lifting up.
Thank you for listening to Feines Bewusstsein, Part 5. And guess what we'll talk about in my next session here with Swami Shailendra Sarasvati from India. Next Sunday, Episode 6 will be out, and it's about happiness and bliss. Goodbye and Jai Guru Dev to you. I'll be back in your ears next week. But I'm not leaving without that little glimpse of bliss that awaits you. Bye.
So bliss is its nature. What makes consciousness alive? So bliss has no cause.
Eine Produktion von This Voice Travels.